is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, Dr. Dish Basketball is ringing in the new year with big savings. This January, buy one Dr. Dish, get one free, or unlock exclusive single-unit discounts during their 2024 Super Sale. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Those are some great deals, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hey, this is James Leith from Unleash the Athlete, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Hey coaches, we know you're invested in the next generation of athletes. So why not give them the star treatment this season with Game Changer? Introducing Game Changer, a free app that provides you with data to make strategic coaching decisions and to deliver memorable moments to your team and its fans. Engage your players, empower your coaching decisions, and give parents the thrill of watching every play unfold in real time this season. Download Game Changer now on iOS or Android. Game Changer equips your team with the tools they need to succeed. Download it today and make this season one for the books. Game Changer. Stream. Score. Connect. Learn more at gc.com/hoopheads. That's gc.com/hoopheads. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight.
And we have nothing to talk about tonight.
Well, we had one podcast planned for at 9 a.m. this morning. I thought we were going to maybe talk all-star starters and debate who was going to make the reserves in each conference. But since today was a day filled with NBA news to go along with Joel Embiid's 70 points last night and Cat's 62 and then getting benched in the last 4 minutes and losing to the Charlotte Hornets, there's plenty of things to talk about beyond All-Star. So I think we're probably going to bump All-Star selections to next weekend. We may just have to debate the team because if I'm not mistaken, I think starters come out Thursday and then I think reserves are next Thursday. So maybe we'll still be able to have time to discuss talk reserves once they pick the starters.
Mike,
so
that's, as, I think, as we plan. Start the podcast tonight, Mike, I want to take you on a journey. 8 years and one day ago. What happened eight years and one day ago, Mike?
Okay, let me think about it. So that would have been 1/22/2016. 2016. What would have happened on that day? That's not Kobe's 81, is it?
No. That's the day that David Blatt was fired, Mike.
Okay.
So all right. I thought it was I honestly, like, I saw the news that Adrian Griffin got fired, and I was like, David Blatt got fired in a very similar situation. The Cavs, I believe at the time, were in first or second in the Eastern Conference, right? They were in a similar record situation. And so my one coworker, I called him and was like, they fired, like, I called him on the inner school phone. I was like, the Bucks just fired their coach. I was like, I'm getting very David Blatt vibes. So I went down a rabbit hole, Mike. I went down a rabbit hole to see how accurate. And it's literally 8 years and the day to the day. It was January 22nd, 2016 that Blatt was fired. The Cavs were in second or third place in the Eastern Conference.
Okay.
And they ended up winning the championship that year. And clearly, it was a move made by LeBron. Of course, all the jokes on Twitter today were that Adrian Griffin wasn't playing Giannis's younger brother enough, so that's why he got fired. But then I started reading some other things, and I don't know. Obviously, your son had quite the exciting basketball game tonight. That there were reports on the NBA, the TNT broadcast tonight, that apparently the executives have been showing up. I don't know if you've seen this. Executives have been showing up to practices the last 2 weeks, not just observing from afar, but literally observing from the sideline, observing from the actual practice facility. And some players were kind of given some eyebrows, some weird, like, knowing stuff, and they kind of kept it under wraps that it was going on. But essentially, what I gather from Crispy Haynes' report on TNT today was that the practices had been evaluated, and what was being addressed, and I don't know if there was something that was said to Adrian Griffin before, that he wasn't making the necessary adjustments and changes. And I know there had been some things that happened last month during at the end of the in-season tournament. There was the player-only airing out meeting where Bobby Portis called out Adrian Griffin and all this other stuff. And clearly, listen, I think they're first in the league in offense, or one of the top two teams in offense for the season. Everything offensively is great, and they're second in the Eastern Conference, but clearly there was a disconnect and there was some not good mojo going. So, you know, the fact that this is happening and Doc Rivers is seemingly going to be replacing them, of course, CNN's the only outlet that has officially reported this. Like, no one else. Woj hasn't said it. Shams hasn't said it's done deal, but CNN, someone said, what is this, 2003? It's CNN's breaking sports news. But I don't know.
Charles is making the break. Van Earl Wright. You don't know those guys?
I saw their names popping up in the thread about CNN breaking the news.
Fred Hickman?
Yeah. Anyways, I don't know that Doc Rivers is the solution to the problems, but I guess he's been also, Mike, this is even the more funny part. He's been advising Adrian Griffin since that players meeting in December. So was he like floating in the background? Was he
Was he feeding him misinformation? This is what you should do. This will really work.
Or was he there? Like, the organization asked him and then they realized, we just need Doc Rivers. Let's get rid of this guy. Let's just get Doc Rivers. I saw the other funny tweet was Mike Boone. Someone said, whatever lake Mike Budenholzer is on fishing right now, he probably has no cell reception. But that was a pretty good one.
He's getting a good chuckle out of it, I guess.
Yeah. So I don't know, Mike. I don't even know where you want to start. The bottom line is this. I don't know that this coaching change is going to do anything, but I wouldn't have said in 2016 that firing David Blatt was going to solve any problems. And then it ended up working out, but it's just kind of funny how it's a very parallel situation to the David Blatt situation, Mike. And you probably did that even cross your mind or no?
Not directly. I mean, there are obviously some parallels in that you're at a point in the season where a guy has been with the team for a little less than half the year or a little bit more than half the year. And
Blatt did have a whole season before that though, Mike, right? He had a whole season before that. So that is a slight difference. He had a year and a half with the team as opposed to 4 or 5 months, right?
And Blatt was obviously a much more experienced head coach, not an NBA head coach, but he had had a tremendous amount of success overseas and was well respected in the coaching community. Not to say that Adrian Griffin is not or was not well respected before he got the job. He had interviewed in a number of other places besides Milwaukee before he ended up getting that job. So I guess to me, there's three pieces to this. One, or two of them are directly related to Milwaukee, and then I think one is a greater league issue or a greater league conversation. So start first with the firing of Adrian Griffin. And I think you have to go back to during training camp, Terry Stotts, longtime head coach of the Portland Trailblazers, who clearly was
Dame
brought
Willard.
In. Yeah, clearly was brought in to facilitate the integration of Damian Lillard into the Milwaukee Bucks organization system, whatever. And the fact that he walked out in training camp with really little to no explanation was not a good sign. And people talked about it at that time that, hey, this isn't a good sign. But when you bring in Dame, and I'm assuming management brought Stotts in specifically for that purpose to be able to work with Damian Lillard, to have a guy on the staff that he had a previous relationship with, to understand who and what Lillard was as a player and what some of the things were that he did well or things that he didn't do well, whatever. That was not a good sign for Adrian Griffin. I think at that point you had to say that the writing was probably on the wall, and it didn't seem necessarily like, ooh, this isn't off to a great start. And then it's been clear kind of as the season has gone on, you know, they started out, they kind of got away from the Bucks' traditional style of defense that they played under Mike Budenholzer with Brooke Lopez dropping and protecting the rim. And clearly when you trade out Jrue Holiday for Lillard, your defense is a lot weaker when you have Lillard at the point of attack as opposed to Jrue Holiday. But the fact that Griffin changed the system, and then I don't know when it was now, 15 or 20 games into the season, when they got off to such an abysmal start defensively, you go back to what they had previously done under Coach Bud. And it just felt like at every turn, you'd see different shots and highlights from games where clearly Giannis was disengaged from a lot of huddles and seemed like he was kind of on an island away from Adrian Griffin and what he was trying to put together. And so I think you could see it coming. Obviously, you never expect a guy to be fired 43 games into his tenure when your team has the second best record in the league. Not really what you were thinking was going to happen, but at the same time, based on all the breadcrumbs that have been left since Adrian Griffin was hired,
yep,
not surprising that it happened. So I think that's the first part that you have to do is, for me, once Terry Stotts walks out of training camp, to me, it felt like, ooh, it may be inevitable that this guy is not going to last very long. And clearly that was the case. So yeah. I think that's number one, is it just didn't feel like every sign coming out of Milwaukee, there was nothing, there was no positive news about Adrian Griffin as a head coach. You weren't getting multiple players defending him. You weren't getting any positive vibes from the Terry Stotts situation. You weren't getting good vibes that he came out with one strategy and then went back to what they had done previously. There just was a lot of things that said, hey, maybe this guy's not the right guy for the job. So clearly you go back to the offseason.
The other part of the report I didn't mention was that he was brought in this, prior to Giannis signing his extension, prior to the trade for Dame Lillard, prior to knowing if Chris Middleton was even and Brooke Lopez were going to get extensions and playing this year. So like their thought process was that they might be going through a different situation with different players and having a different rebuild when they hired him, which again is very synonymous with that of the David Blatt situation, because when David Blatt was hired, we didn't have LeBron. We didn't have Kevin Love. We didn't know they were going to have those two guys. So like I said, that was the other part that stuck out to me too, was it's very David Blatt. Like he was signed on to be a coach of a different team than he ended up having to coach. Right. I mean,
yes, but let's take it one step further. In the LeBron situation, he comes back to the Cavaliers, but he clearly had not signed off or given his blessing to David Blatt, who was hired.
Whereas before. Giannis did. Yeah.
Right. Whereas clearly the Bucks weren't hiring Adrian Griffin unless Giannis signed off on it, especially, as you said, because they signed him before Giannis signs the extension. Now, maybe Giannis was lukewarm about the guy, but it just still seems highly unlikely that Milwaukee being in the position that it was and Giannis being in the position that he was in terms of his approaching free agency, that Milwaukee would not have been very, very, very careful about who they hired and what that process looked like and making sure that they had input from Giannis. It seems highly unlikely that they went to him and said, hey, this is the guy we're going to hire. And Giannis is like, I don't want this guy. And then the Bucks said, hey, we're still going to hire him. That just doesn't seem like something that would have realistically happened. So you have to guess that Giannis signed off on him. And for him to sour on him this quickly, like I said, to me, it comes back to the Terry Stotts thing during training camp. That to me was the death knell of Adrian Griffin as the head coach.
It was a red flag.
Yeah. Like, I just don't know. It just didn't seem like it was going to be the right fit for whatever reason. And maybe they thought it was one thing and it turned out to be another. And so clearly Milwaukee was ready to move on for whatever internal reasons you might think. Obviously, defensively, they've been poor compared to where they've been in the past. They clearly have different personnel. But if you want to win a championship, I think it's hard to be as bad as Milwaukee is defensively, no matter how good you are offensively. And they're like 0.2 of a point per game behind Indiana for the number one offense in the league, which is probably the number two offense in the history of basketball based on the way that scoring is in this particular season. So part one is they fire Adrian Griffin. It seemed like the writing was on the wall since Stotts was in training camp. So that's part one for me. Part two then becomes, okay, if you're going to fire him, then who are you bringing in, right? And it appears that you're going to bring in Doc Rivers, which
I guess the Bill Simmons Doc Rivers podcast are gone after, right?
I guess they're going to be gone unless Bill's going to be interviewing a live NBA coach who probably would not be in position to be very forthcoming were he to become the head coach of the Milwaukee Bucks. But I think what's interesting is whenever you fire a coach midseason, obviously there are 29 other guys who are already employed. Your choices often when you fire a coach in season is you bring in somebody from the current staff and you just promote someone who's already there sitting on the bench. And clearly it does not appear that the Bucks are going to do that, because that seems like if that's what you were going to do.
Joe Prunty is the interim coach until they officially announce Doc Rivers as the head coach.
I think this is Joe Prunty's at least his second stint as an interim head coach, because I know he was the interim head coach of the Raptors at one point. And
for some reason,
I feel like he may have even been.
The crack research staff is on it. The crack research staff is on it while you're talking.
Okay, get on it while I'm talking. So it doesn't appear like they're going to promote somebody from within to take over the job on a full-time basis. But because you're in the middle of the season and 29 other coaches are employed, that leaves you with, I would have to think, fairly limited options of who's out there.
You're right. He was the interim head coach of the Milwaukee Bucks in 2018. He was the interim head coach of the Atlanta Hawks in 2023.
I was going to say, I thought maybe he was with the Hawks too. That was the other one that I was thinking of.
And now he's the interim head coach of the Milwaukee Bucks. Death follows you, Joe Prunty. Don't have him on your bench. He was an assistant to the Cavs. Did you know that?
Not the Raptors.
He's never been on the Raptors. He was on the Cavs assistant bench. He was an assistant coach of the Cavs from 2010 to 2013. When we were really good at basketball.
All right. Joe Prunty. Well, Joe Prunty, I have news for him, you, and everybody else. I don't think Joe Prunty is getting the Milwaukee Bucks permanent head coaching job. So I guess then what I'm saying is there isn't a tremendous amount of choices at this point in a season for who he can go out and hire. I guess you could be theoretically interviewing assistance from other teams. Clearly, though, that's not the type of profile that you're looking for a team that is championship or bust, basically, at this point. So you need a coach with experience. There aren't that many coaches out there who are not coaching that have that kind of experience that can step into the job. And clearly, Doc Rivers fits that profile. He's half a season removed from being the Philadelphia 76ers head coach, where I would say that most people felt like his performance with the Sixers was mixed reviews, certainly not rave reviews.
He also had a clown show going on.
Yeah. I'm not sure what to think of Doc Rivers as the head coach of the Milwaukee Bucks. I certainly feel like, based on his pedigree and experience, he should be an upgrade for this type of team over Adrian Griffin. I don't hate it if I'm Milwaukee. I don't know. Like I said, I don't think there were many better options out there for Milwaukee to hire. So if Doc Rivers ends up being the guy that they hire, I feel like they're probably in better hands with Doc Rivers than they are or were with Adrian Griffin. So if you're going to fire Griffin midseason, which it clearly feels like that was a ship that had sailed, that the players were no longer bought in, the story that you told off the top about management being in there watching practices and keeping tabs on what was going on, it seems like the organization and the players did not want to employ Adrian Griffin any longer. And so if you're going to get rid of him, then you have to find somebody. And Doc Rivers, honestly, him sitting there as a coach who has coached in the league for a long time, a guy who's only 43 games removed from being a head coach in this league, I think you could do a lot worse than Doc Rivers. He's won a championship. Has he failed at times? Has he blown a lot of series leads with his teams? Has he made mistakes? Certainly, but he's a guy who is experienced. He's a guy who brings a championship resume to Milwaukee. And so overall, I would say firing a coach midseason and bringing in Doc Rivers, if that's what ends up happening, to me, I think that's a fine move for the Bucks. They're certainly in a better coaching position the moment they hire Doc Rivers than they have been up until this point this season with Adrian Griffin. So it remains to be seen what Doc Rivers will do with this roster and what changes he might make and what impact he may have on the way that they play. But I don't think you can argue that you're better off with Doc Rivers sitting on your bench than Adrian Griffin. And I know, look, I've advocated on this podcast a bunch of times that I'd rather see a team, my team specifically, hire an assistant coach who maybe doesn't have a track record but could become the next really good coach, as opposed to hiring an NBA retread. But when you're talking about midseason, I don't know what you're getting. So just as an example, right, Utah hires Will Hardy, never been an assistant coach. He's probably, I would say, considered, if you think about all the different media outlets, podcasts, things I've read, just watching what he's done with the Utah Jazz, he's probably a top 5 to 7 coach at this point, reputationally, around the league. You look at Mark Daigneault with Oklahoma City and what he's done. You look at what Taylor Jenkins did at Memphis. These are all guys that are not huge pedigree guys the way Doc Rivers is a pedigree guy. But at the same time, you could throw Adrian Griffin into that same category, right? He's an assistant that had interviewed for multiple jobs, and he got hired by Milwaukee. It didn't work out. Will Hardy probably had interviewed for other jobs, gets the job off the Celtics bench and goes to Utah. I think I still would rather take a chance on an assistant, but in season, I think Milwaukee, Doc Rivers to me is a good hire at this point, if that's who they end up hiring.
Scoop Nation. Bill Simmons just tweeted out, because they just released their podcast, he wrote, "New BS podcast. We lost Doc from the pod? No, with 17 O's after it." So I have to imagine if that's not confirmation, I don't know what
close.
Is.
Pretty close. All right. So that's 2 points. And then I have a third point to make. So,
okay. Yeah.
Point one, again, it seemed like Adrian Griffin was on his way out from the moment that Terry Stotts walked out of training camp. So they wanted to make a change. Part two, you had limited options of who you could hire. I think hiring Doc Rivers, is it the perfect hire? Probably not. Is it the best case scenario for firing somebody in the middle of the season and bringing in a coach who has a championship on his resume and who's only half a season removed from being a head coach? I don't think you can argue that it's a pretty good move based on what's available. And then the last point, the greater point, when it comes to the league, you also realize that coaching in the NBA is tremendously, tremendously difficult. I don't know anything about Adrian Griffin as a coach. I don't know anything about his basketball acumen. I don't know anything about what he's like in an interview. I don't know anything about his work ethic and the time he puts it. I don't know anything about any of that. But I'm guessing that for a guy who paid his dues and was an assistant in numerous places, that he's probably a tremendously hard worker. He was probably tremendously prepared to come in and do the best job that he possibly could. He probably, from an X's and O's standpoint, knew as much as anybody else in the league. But ultimately, what it comes down to is the psychology of dealing with your best players and figuring out and getting those guys to buy in. Because I think you can talk schemes all you want. You can talk X's and O's, and you can talk this guy's masterful and that guy's not and this and that. But just think about the number of interviews that we've done, Jay, that we've talked to coaches who, how many guys have we had say to us, you know, X's and O's, anybody can learn that. I can figure that out. There's so many places that I can go to learn X's and O's. And again, we're talking not to NBA head coaches. We're talking to college coaches, or we're talking to high school coaches, which it's not at the same level of sophistication as the NBA level. But I guess my point is that, yeah, you can scheme some stuff up, but everybody in the NBA has a staff of 15 coaches that are preparing and getting teams ready. And I find it hard to believe that Adrian Griffin was that far behind the curve on just how to play the game from a philosophical standpoint and X's and O's standpoint. That just doesn't seem as likely to me as the fact that he just didn't get his guys to buy into what he was selling. And so from an NBA overall league perspective, you look at it, and you say, if you think about the guys who have been most successful, both currently and historically, you're talking about guys who can get to their stars, get their stars to buy into what they're doing, what their system is, or the way they coach, or what they want their players to do out on the floor, and builds that relationship where the star trusts the coach trusts the star, and I don't think anybody can put a finger on what that is. I don't think you can put a finger on it. I don't think I can put a finger on it. I wonder if even like you talked to Phil Jackson or Eric Spoelstra, guys who have had tremendous success, and asked them, hey, what is it about you, your personality, what you do that allows you to connect Popovich with your players?
I got to talk to, right?
Right. I mean, I think they could probably articulate something, but I would guess that if you talk to an unsuccessful coach, they would probably say that they tried to do a lot of those same things, right? They're investing in their players off the floor. They're telling them they care about them. They're demonstrating all those things, or at least they're trying to do that. And so I don't know what that secret sauce is. I do know that some guys have it and some guys don't. And it appears that Adrian Griffin didn't have it, at least not in his first go round with Giannis and Dame and the rest of the roster. So it's an interesting firing because it just brings up all these different points about what an NBA coach, where their value is, right? And I think a lot of coaches in the NBA they're not value add. They're not value taken away. They're just doing their job. And I wonder, and we talked about it a little bit before on other podcasts, like how many guys really actually move the needle as a head coach. If you have this guy as your head coach, does that make that meaningful of a difference? And I think honestly it comes down to, can you relate to your stars and get them the buy-in? Those are the guys that have success.
And I'm going to say, like, I think the other thing to think about too is, like, think 2 weeks ago, Darvin Ham's name had come up about a guy who was going to get fired. That was the whole play he drew up, and LeBron's sitting on the bench like, just like back when Blatt drew up the play and LeBron I scratched that play. I scratched it. That will forever be in my head, right? That will always be in my head. I scratched that play that he had drawn up. Like, this may not be the only fire midway through the season of a playoff team. Would you be surprised if there was another team that fired someone? I think that I wouldn't be super surprised. I wouldn't in this day and age. I wouldn't be surprised.
I would not be surprised if at some point in the season somebody else gets fired. Now, it would be hard to believe that somebody at the top of the league standings, the way Milwaukee is, were to get fired. But 10 games from now, would I be stunned if Darvin Ham got fired? Not really.
I think JB's got his job saved right now. I think he's okay.
At this point, I think he's probably okay. I look at the list of the other guy that I think.
Joe Mazzulla. I told you. That guy. I'm over that guy.
Okay. I'm not convinced Joe Mazzulla is a great coach. I'm not even convinced he's a good coach.
Good coach.
Maybe an average coach. But he's not getting fired.
I know.
I look at the guy I look at that, to me, who was expected to make a big difference in his team, and to this point, he's made no difference.
Can I guess? He's bottom of the Eastern Conference standings. He's getting paid
Well, that's a good one too.
He's getting paid a lot of money to do terrible things.
Monty Williams is getting paid a lot of money, and I'm not convinced that. I don't know what I don't know philosophically what he's doing and who he's playing and why he's playing them and what the organizational philosophy is. I don't really understand anything that's going on with Monty Williams. So,
okay. Can I guess the other one? Is it a
East. A person who was brought in with a team that people thought potentially could be pretty good. And they certainly thought that this person was going to improve.
Have they hit two games? Did the same player hit game winners in back-to-back game for this team? DeJounte Murray, Atlanta Hawks.
Oh yeah.
He had game winners against Miami and the Udonis Haslem retirement ceremony after the game, and something else.
Trade him now.
He had back-to-back game winners that win those two games, and then they got smoked by the Cavs. So,
I did not realize that before they came into that Cavs game. But yeah, the Hawks. I mean, Quinn Snyder. You think about when they hired him last year. People thought, "Oh, this guy's going to come in and he's going to be able to get Trae Young to buy in." And Trae Young's had a tremendous offensive year. I mean, if you look at, he's averaging like 28 and I think 10.5 or 11 assists. So statistically, he's been tremendous like he always is. But I think people thought that Quinn Snyder was going to get they thought he was going to change the way the Hawks played and that he was get them to be a more competent team. And that has not been the case. I mean, they are far less than competent at this point. And if anything, I'd say they've gotten worse since Quinn Snyder's been there. Now, he's probably not going to get fired, but if you're Atlanta, I know this is a whole nother discussion, but Atlanta's a mess because I don't know what you do with.
One of those guys is not going to be on the team. One of those guys is not going to be on the team. I wouldn't be surprised if one of them gets traded before the trading deadline, but they will not both be on the roster definitely next season. I'd willing to bet a lot. I agree. There's a higher percentage that Donovan Mitchell signs an extension with the Cleveland Cavaliers than one of those two guys is on the roster at the start of next season. I just don't buy it.
How long? I think they're going to trade Murray before the trade deadline, honestly. But the question then becomes, how long can you go with Trae Young as your best player? And it's so weird because when you think about that playoff run and how good he was in their runs to the Eastern Conference Finals. I mean, he was like this, right? Yeah, absolutely. You and I sat on this podcast and I listened to a ton of other pods that everybody was kind of stunned to some degree that he performed as well as he did in those playoffs, but he was phenomenal in that particular playoff run. And he's never come close to reaching that level of impact as far as being a winning player. And you just wonder if you're Atlanta, I know the guy is an offensive stat producing machine and he's putting up whatever I said, 10, 28 and 10 and a half maybe this year, but it just doesn't feel like the way he plays, his size, his lack of defense. How much longer, if you're Atlanta, can you afford to say that Trae Young's our number one guy? We're going to continue to try to build around what and who Trae Young is. I don't know if I can answer that question. I don't have a sense of how popular Trae Young is in the Atlanta market, but I do know if I was the Hawks GM that I would certainly be kicking the tires on what I could get for Trae Young if I put him out on the market. And I have no idea what that market would be. I don't know if there'd be a big demand for him, no demand for him. I don't know. I don't know what the league thinks of Trae Young, to be honest with you.
I don't know. I don't know what the league's going to think about this one, Mike.
Now
did
what?
You see the end of the
breaking news?
Did you see the end of the Portland Oklahoma City game?
Well, I'm looking at the score. I see Oklahoma City won 111-109. That's all I got.
With the lead 109-108, Chauncey Billups is yelling for a timeout with 15.6 seconds left. The refs do not give Chauncey Billups said timeout and instead call a double dribble on the Portland player. Chauncey Billups then immediately gets onto the floor and gets assessed with two technical fouls and ejected. Because he's yelling, I'm calling a timeout. I'm calling a timeout. So now
this Portland, sounds eerily familiar to your situation.
I didn't get ejected nor did I get a technical foul. And that was not for public consumption, Mike. Thank you. Portland filing. I also could not protest the result of my game. Like Portland
true,
is
very true. Very true.
Portland is, I mean, not that this is going to do anything. When has that ever happened? Like there's never, when has a protest ever been upheld? Are they going to do put 15.8 seconds back on the clock and finish the game? Like
probably not. Probably not.
And insidehoops.com NBA tweeted Trailblazers legend Rasheed Wallace would have picked up 43 techs in the last 15 seconds if he was on the floor.
So, it's nice to bring Rasheed back into the podcast.
Yeah, listen,
always a fan.
Yeah.
North Carolina guy, Rasheed.
We have so many other things to talk about. We've spent 35 minutes talking about coaches in the NBA. Let's transition to some lighter news, Mike. Tristan Thompson suspended for 25 games for using human growth hormone of some kind of supplement. I don't exactly know what the supplement is, but it's when you think about it, he was washed. And I kept saying on the podcast, man, Tristan Thompson looks really good. Explanation granted, and also there's been some really good memes going on about Tristan Thompson's personal life and cheating, and I'm just going to leave it at that. There's been a lot of good memes, Mike, and a lot of good statements made me chuckle today that I'm not going to reference on the podcast. But here's the bottom line, Mike. The Cavs, obviously, since the end of December, Mike, they have been the number one rated offensive net rating team, number one defensive team, number eight, I think seven or eight offensive team. Here's my problem, though. We now don't have a backup for Jared Allen, right? Like who's that guy we signed that was supposed to be our savior? Damian Lee, is that right?
Damian Lee.
Have you even played that much? He hasn't played that much. He's got to be our backup now, right? Because there's no other bigs. Like now that Tristan's out 25 games, I mean, he might as well be out the rest of the season at this point. There's like, yikes. We got to go find someone. Someone tweeted a picture of Kendrick Perkins in a Cavs uniform. Bring back the perk. I'm not quite going there. My friend asked me, can Zadrunas come out of retirement? Sean Kemp.
Oh man, I don't think I'd be willing to go Sean Kemp. But
I don't know who we can get to play center. I mean, clearly they don't have any faith in like Isaiah Mobley because he hardly's played. You got, I just don't know. I don't know what they're going to do for their backup pick. And I guess we're going to find out tomorrow, right? I mean, we're going to see what they try to do tomorrow. It's going to be an interesting matchup. We're going to be the team without a coach versus the team without a backup big because he tried to cheat, I guess. I don't know. The Cavs are playing so well. Sam Merrill should be in the three-point contest. I'm jumping on the Donovan Mitchell bandwagon. Get Sam Merrill in the three-point contest. What a revelation. Also, saw a funny tweet about that. Someone said, Sam Merrill realizing that Tristan told him that his powder drink had given him superpowers, and Sam Merrill started to drink said powder drink, and now he's worried about getting tested positive. And anyways,
you're saying don't set your glass down in the Cavs locker room? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. We got Mark McGuire.
It's like a college party. Don't set your glass down. You never know what's going to happen.
Yeah. Anyways, listen, I'm really happy the Cavs have turned it around. It'll be interesting once Darius Garland and Mobley. Mobley's been doing pregame workouts, which is positively, a step in the right direction. But I guess I didn't realize that when Garland had his thing, it was a lot more serious than they had originally had thought. So he like had to have his mouth completely wired shut. You saw that, right? Yes. And when he had, because of that, his nutrition was down. So he wasn't able to do as much exercising as you would have thought. Oh man, a broken jaw. He's going to be in good shape and he's just going to have to like, no, it sounds like it's going to be a little bit longer of a process, Mike. So he's not necessarily as close, but it seems like Mobley's doing pregame workouts, which is good, right? That's a step in the right direction, which that would be sooner than we thought, I think. Oh, the other fun fact. Did you see the other fun fact that in the last six games, the Cavs have trailed by a total of in 35 seconds of the game? Mike, that's pretty impressive.
They've played really, really well. Now, granted, their schedule has been pretty weak, as we always say whenever we're talking about these teams.
They played Orlando. They played Atlanta.
Right, like, I get it. Those are Orlando's trending down, and the Hawks have been down the whole time. Those aren't the complete dregs of the league, like the Wizards, who they beat in.
But they beat the
San
Bucks.
Antonio
they beat the Bucks. I know it was without Giannis, but they beat the Bucks. I mean,
I'm not saying it's nothing. What I'm saying is that it still is not. They haven't been playing a gauntlet of great teams. That being said, I think this 8-game winning streak crystallizes basically what we talked about, right? It crystallizes the fact that what do the Cavs have on this roster, and does the roster as it's currently constructed with a healthy Darius Garland, with a healthy Evan Mobley, does this roster make sense? Or is there something with you can do with one or two of those core four guys that would allow you to bring in someone, multiple someones who better fit around the guys that are left if you make a move with any of these guys? Now, at one point we sat here and I raised the possibility of them trading Donovan Mitchell before that even became something that the national media was talking about. I don't think that the Cavs are going to make a move with any of those four core guys during this season. I don't think it makes sense. You don't want to trade out any of those four guys for draft picks. You don't want to trade out any of those four guys for pennies on the dollar. I think the Cleveland Cavaliers are going to stand pat with this roster and give them a second chance in the playoffs, where last year they were so abysmally horrible against the New York Knicks that I think everybody nationally, and I think to some degree us, now you feel like they're in a prove it mode where, okay, the regular season, big deal. You still got to show it in the playoffs. But I think the Cavs would be making a mistake, I think, if they traded any of these guys. The only caveat to that would be if Donovan Mitchell went to them and said, I'm not signing an extension. Trade me. See what you can get for me. And I don't know what they could get for him, but they definitely could get some good stuff for Donovan Mitchell. I don't even think that I necessarily – I go back and forth, right? Because I think you're never going to maximize these four guys with the roster they have. And yet, I think the individual talent of any of those guys, no matter which of those four you traded out, I'm guessing you'd get a lesser player or lesser value back than you would if you dealt any one of those guys. And I think they're going to give it – I think they're going to run it back and try at least one more run through the playoffs with this team. Then you go into the summer and you figure out what you have with Mitchell. Is he going to sign? Is he not going to sign? And then you go from there and make decisions based upon the decision that Donovan Mitchell makes. And look, they've been playing incredibly well with this lineup and with what they have. There's no question that Darius Garland and Evan Mobley have more talent than anybody that's currently playing in the rotation in those spots. So it feels like, hey, can they figure it out when you get an injection of more talent? And I think that's where you have to say, do you believe in these four guys being able to figure it out? And do you believe in JB Bickerstaff and the coaching staff to figure out how do we maintain the same level of efficiency on offense and production on defense and incorporate those two guys back into what you're doing? And I don't have all those answers, but that's what those coaching, that's what JB and the coaching staff is going to be paid a lot of money to figure out. Chris, so we'll see.
Chris Haynes just tweeted, Milwaukee Bucks and Doc Rivers continue to work towards a deal that will make him the franchise's next head coach, but there is no agreement in place as of now. League sources tell NBA.
There you go. There you go. There you go.
So,
all right, Cavs question for you. Let me ask you this.
Okay.
You have to trade one of those four guys. Which of the four would you trade if you were forced to trade one of those four?
Well, given that Jared Allen plays the center position, and I don't think that he's going to get yield you as much back. I just don't think he's going to be the guy. So he's staying. I think this is painful. I think it's either going to be Mitchell or Mobley, Mike, because I think those are the two guys you can get the most for. I think Mobley because of his upside. I mean, he was an all defensive player and he still could theoretically get better offensively. Or Mitchell because you only have him under contract for 1 year, but at the same time, he is a top 15 player in the NBA, top 20 player in the NBA, and you can get a lot for him, even on a 1 year rental. I think you could get something for him. But those are the two guys. I don't think Garland's an option. I don't think Jared Allen's an option because I don't think you're going to get a lot for him, even though he's averaging a double-double. Although there was a tweet circulating that Bill Simmons' what-if trade, did you see, do you remember the what-if trade from December 19th when he said, what if we traded Draymond Green for Jared Allen straight up?
I remember yeah.
I'll pass, Bill Simmons.
I'll pass. That's a hard no.
So,
all right.
I think it has to be those two. One of those two guys.
I think the question is, how much do you believe in what Darius Garland and what Evan Mobley can be? What are the ceiling for those two guys, and which one of those two ceilings do you think is higher? And then I think you make a decision from there. If you think Darius Garland's ceiling is higher than Evan Mobley's, that means he's going to be a pretty good player. Then I think you probably look to see what you could get for Donovan Mitchell that would fit better around Garland, Allen, Mobley. Just like you, I don't think you trade Jared Allen. To me, that might be a trade that you would make if you felt like, hey, we've got a backup center that can give us 70% of that production. And trading Jared Allen allows us to bring in another guy at a position of greater need who's a better player than Jared Allen. But I feel like if you traded Jared Allen today, you would end up getting a player who is worse, or you'd get draft picks, which the Cavs aren't in position to, at this point, stockpile draft picks. They're in win now mode. So that's why I don't think you trade Jared Allen. And then if you think that Evan Mobley, if you've come to the conclusion that he's never going to turn into a better offensive player than what he is now, which would be tremendously disappointing. Now, Evan Mobley is still a really good player. When you look at, he's averaging 16 points a game and 10 rebounds. So you're talking about a guy that averaged a double-double, almost two blocks a game, and is going to be first-team all-defense probably for the rest of his career. But if he tops out as a 16 and 10 guy on offense, like, you chalk that up as a loss for the Cavs, for what I think you and I and lots of people here in Cleveland thought that he could be. So if you think that he is what he is right now and he's not going to get much better, then I would honestly be okay trading Mobley, because I feel like you could probably get a pretty good haul back for him. And now you're building around Mitchell, Garland, Allen, and presumably some guys that would be bigger wings that you could defend with and make up for maybe that lack of size in the backcourt. I just keep coming back to, I don't know. I go, which is the worst redundancy? Is it the Allen Mobley can't shoot redundancy, or is it the Mitchell Garland both need the ball, little guard, defensive liability redundancy? I go back and forth. You talk to me 1 minute, I might say it's one. And if you talk to me 2 minutes later, I might say it's the other. I don't know which one is a worse redundancy.
Yeah, I don't know either. Well, to be discussed on further pods, Mike. How about that?
That's it. I guess we leave it. I guess we'll leave the Cavs there. But it's fun to see them playing well. And I know we said their ceiling was probably fourth in the East. And look, they're an injury away, or maybe a coaching change in Milwaukee and something going completely haywire, from maybe they creep up into the top three. I don't think that's what's going to happen. I think they're probably going to settle in at four or five is what I would guess. But you're winning without two of your four best players. And so either that speaks to the problems that this roster has, that it makes more sense when they're gone, or it portends that, hey, maybe they figured something out, and now you inject two guys who are more talented than the dudes who are currently playing.
Yeah.
And maybe that just supercharges this team. The answer is probably somewhere in between, but this team's got a decent shot to win 50 games again, I think, and probably finish in the top four.
Yep. All right, Mike, I got a trivia question for you.
Okay.
Going back to my protest statement a few minutes ago, I know we're jumping around a little bit here, but there's only been one protest won in the last 40 years.
I have no idea. No idea.
They incorrectly counted Shaq's fouls. They fouled him out when he actually had five. But when they went and replayed the 52 seconds, that happened in December 19th, 2007. When they went and replayed the final 52 seconds in March, nobody scored. But Shaq wasn't even on the team because he had been traded to Phoenix.
Nice. Nice. I guess I vaguely remember that now that you say it, that
he
was traded after the – yeah. So
there you go.
I would have never gotten that. I would have never gotten that off the top of my head. So I did hear something interesting today. I think on the mismatch, they just – this is talking about Embiid's 50-point, but as long as we're – or 70-point, as long as we're talking trivia, that Embiid is currently averaging, I think, 36 points a game. But his 36 – per 36 minute, he's having the best scoring season since Wilt Chamberlain. That's crazy. Per 36 minutes.
It was very apropos that tweet, you sent me that tweet, Mike,
going behind the scenes. The Wilt Chamberlain tweet?
Chamberlain, super. Here's, well, I'm not going to reference, go, if you have Twitter, go look at Super 70 Sports and find the Wilt Chamberlain tweet. And then that same day, you sent that to me yesterday, right? That was yesterday, right?
I believe that was yesterday, yeah.
And Embiid breaks the record.
Yeah.
And
yeah, that was fun.
A stat line that only MJ is the only other player that had.
Yeah, it's crazy. Embiid, so, look, Embiid's been phenomenal. I don't know if we want to hit this real quick. Obviously, yeah. 70 points. I think he's one of only nine guys that scored 70. Like, Wilt's done it, like, I don't even know how many times, seven or eight times, I think. And then there's eight other guys, including Embiid now, who have scored 70. Donovan Mitchell has a 71. Lillard has a 71. Booker has a 72. Kobe has 81. Elgin Baylor, I think, has 70. I forget who else has a 70. David Robinson, David Thompson. I know there's nine. I'm probably missing somebody. I don't even know how many I just named off. But anyway,
I think you got to score everyone. 70 Mike, is Elgin Baylor, Wilt Chamberlain.
Yeah.
Wilt Chamberlain did it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Six times. What team did he play for when he got those?
I don't know. I mean, he probably
it was all the same team.
Philadelphia Warriors.
It is. Yep. Yeah. Good job, Mike. I'm proud of you.
Yeah. Well, that was early in his career when he was. That was a lot of those were probably during the 62 season when he averaged 50.
Yep.
But look, Embiid has been phenomenal. I think that when you start talking Embiid, it still comes down to the same thing that we've talked about with Embiid for the last 3 or 4 years. Regular season's nice. If he continues at this pace, I mean, he's going to win his second MVP and go back to back. I don't think there's any doubt about that. If he continues to put up this stat line and shoot the way, I mean, he's shooting like 56. I think he's shooting close to 40, if not higher than 40 from three. And then he's like 89% from the line. I mean, he's been phenomenal. And yet I look at him as he's a prove it to me guy come playoff time. And I'll believe it when I see it. And I haven't seen it to this point. So the Sixers get regular season Joel Embiid in the playoffs, man, they're going to be tough to beat. But that guy has not shown up in the playoffs in any real meaningful way. And until he does, it's going to be a monkey on his back.
And then do Karl Anthony Towns. We want to talk about them. 62 points, right? 62 points, got benched. Then yep. then the Chris Finch just rips the team at the end and the post-game press conference basically saying, you're hunting for a number. It's ridiculous. We're playing basketball. It's juvenile or something. He says juvenile, right? He said juvenile behavior. Just essentially
not good for a team that's himself. At the top of the Western Conference, right? Not a good.
But you know what? I'm giving him credit. Look. I'm giving Chris French a lot of credit. He's laying it out there. Like, listen, like, and I'm kind of impressed because I don't think many coaches would have undressed their team like that, especially in that situation. I don't know.
So the question is, right? The question is, how do you address that? Is that something that you address internally first and then you address externally with the media? Where do you go with that? Obviously, you hope that a coach knows their team and how they're going to be affected. But sometimes you wonder, like, if you're getting that in public, you wonder what is being said or what's going on behind the scenes. Makes me a little nervous for the Timberwolves, at least a little. You know what the Timberwolves need? Magic Mind. Seems like maybe they weren't focused enough and they weren't.
They got a little tired at the end there, Mike.
Got a little tired at the end. Couldn't finish against the Charlotte Hornets. And I know you've heard us talk about Magic Mind if you've been listening to our NBA episodes the last
couple
of weeks.
My phone's heard me talking about Magic Mind. It keeps telling me to buy some, Mike. My Facebook ads say you need some Magic Mind.
Magic Mind is doing a great job of getting the word out there about what a great product it is. And as we've talked about, I feel like, especially in these late night podcasts right now, it's 12:40 a.m. as we sit here in a recording.
And Mike's gonna need some Magic Mind to get the editing done tonight.
I already had some before the podcast, so that was good. After my son's game, two high school teams combined to put up
214 points
in a 32-minute high school game. Probably, I would say, one of the highest level high school games that I can remember sitting and watching. Unfortunately, my son's team came up short. But anyway, Magic Mind, since we've started using it, I feel like it's made a huge difference in what I do late at night. And I'm able to get more done in a shorter period of time because I just feel like I'm more dialed in. And so Jason and I both would recommend highly that you go out, check out Magic Mind. You can visit, they still have a deal here in the month of January. You can visit magicmind.com/janhoopheads. That's magicmind.com/JAN hoopheads. And if you use the code hoopheads20, you'll get 1 month free when you subscribe for 3 months of Magic Mind. So again, magicmind.com, Jan Hoopheads, J-A-N Hoopheads, and use the code hoopheads20. So maybe Carl Anthony Towns will get on some Magic Mind, and instead of getting 62, he'll play the last 4 minutes and he'll get his 70-point game the next time. I don't know what that means for Minnesota, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I don't either. All right, Mike, I think there's one more thing we could talk about, and then I think we should wrap it. What do you think? Trade today.
That sounds good.
The trade, the thing that started the day off, Mike. Well, actually, yeah, the trade. Here's the trade. The Heat traded Kyle Lowry in a 2027 first-round pick for Terry Rozier. My response to this trade, okay.
You're giving it a meh?
It's a meh?
It's a meh?
I have to say, I might be recanting the meh on the OG trade because the Knicks are 9-1 since he got there, and they're playing well, and they're playing better competition than the Cavs have. But I'm a meh because I don't see that Terry Rozier is going to change the outcomes of the Heat. Now, I want to be clear here, though. Last year, the Heat added a piece near this time of year, Sir Kevin Love, right? They added Kevin Love, and not that Kevin Love was a world breaker, but he was definitely shifted the dynamic a little bit, and it ended up working out for them. Kevin Love's continued to play well for them. And now, can Terry Rozier encapsulate that Boston Celtics energy? And he's had a pretty good year this year, despite the Hornets being terrible. Can he catapult them? Maybe. But it sounds like the Hornets are going to move Lowry or buy him out or something. Like, I don't know where Lowry ends up. He'll probably end up on a contender, I would guess, another contender. I just don't know what contender is going to want him. I don't see him as a Laker option, right? He's not a Laker option, is he? Is Kyle Lowry to the Lakers an option? Is that an option, Mike? I didn't even think about that. Is that maybe?
I think he makes too much money.
If he gets bought out, though.
If he gets bought out, maybe. I don't know that at this point what Kyle Lowry does is tremendously beneficial to the Lakers, but maybe. I think it's more when you look at this trade, it seems like Kyle Lowry is probably cooked. Maybe he gets rejuvenated if he goes somewhere like LA, but
maybe he should go to Tristan.
There you go. five for 30, I think, in his last five games. And clearly I think the Heat needed somebody better in that spot. Terry Rozier, here's his stats for this year. Averaging 23 a game for the Hornets, 6.5 assists, shooting 46% from the field, 36% from three, 85% from the line. So, as you said, Rozier's having a good year. When you look at him on the Miami Heat, he's probably your fourth option offensively behind Jimmy, Bam, and Tyler Hero. As a fourth option, pretty good player to have as your fourth guy.
Yeah.
Is he a traditional point guard? I think of Terry Rozier as being more of a combo guard than a pure point guard, but he's certainly somebody who can score. He's somebody who earlier in his career played in big games when he was playing in Boston. So it's not like you're bringing a guy from a team that he's never had the opportunity to play for winning teams, because he has. And so I think if you're Miami, and I know that pick has, I think it's lottery protected for the first season, because I think it's a 2027, I think, or 2026. Might have been a 2026, but it's lottery protected the first year, and then I think it becomes unprotected the next year. So Miami rarely has fallen completely off a cliff where they're at risk of giving Charlotte a top five or six pick. So it seems like you're probably getting a middle of the road first round pick. You're getting off you're getting off Kyle Lowry's salary, which if I'm not mistaken, I believe takes them under the second apron for heading into the summer, which again allows them to continue to make trades, and then it opens up when the draft is over, it opens up like another number one pick that they can trade and whatever. There's a whole bunch of things going on there. But it not only gives them a better player, but it also provides them with some flexibility, and then you kind of pay the cost of that protected first round pick. So again, I don't necessarily love this and say, oh, this is a slam dunk winner. Now all of a sudden Miami's back to being the favorite in the Eastern Conference, but it certainly, Terry Rozier is an upgrade over Kyle Lowry at this point in his career. And if you're Miami, I think it's probably a good move. And if you're Charlotte, you're going nowhere fast anyway. You pick up a first round draft pick, and then maybe you can deal Kyle Lowry for something else that you can either utilize yourself or stockpile to potentially make another future deal for, you know, some other guys. I will say one of the things with the Hornets, and you look at that game against the Timberwolves last night, and I think that if I'm not mistaken, Brandon Miller had like 28 last night. And I think Brandon Miller is going to be all right, man. I think he's going to be a good player. He's averaging like 15 a game right now, 4 rebounds, like 2.5 assists, shooting the ball relatively well, 38% from 3, 82% from the line. Like Brandon Miller's been sneakily good. He hasn't been spectacularly good, which is why you don't hear a ton about him, but he's going to be a real good player. And I think with Charlotte, it comes down to LaMelo, right? Is LaMelo a foundational guy that eventually can be one of your two best players on a winning team? Or is he just a losing team, sideshow Bob type thing where he's just kind of, he's entertaining, but he's not a winning player. And I don't know where I come down on that. I would probably lean more towards that side of the spectrum than him being the best player on a good team. But if you have LaMelo and he turns out to be closer to the best version of what he can be, and then you have Brandon Miller, you got two pretty good players who are
long. I've got a kid on my team that wears LaMelo's shoes, Mike.
Nice, nice. Look, LaMelo's a popular guy. I mean, there's no doubt he's a popular player. So I don't know. It'll be interesting. Charlotte, at least, I think if you're Charlotte, you can at least tell yourself, we have LaMelo Ball and we have Brandon Miller. And I know Mark Williams has been hurt, but before he got hurt, he looked like he could potentially be a functional, better than average center in the league. But look, LaMelo and Brandon Miller they're the archetypes, at least theoretically, of guys you want in the league, guys who are long for their position, guys who can, again, theoretically defend multiple positions. They have size. Those are two pretty good pieces to build around. The question is, Charlotte's been so abysmal for so long. I know they have new ownership and maybe that starts to turn things around, but you at least can talk yourself into, if you're a Hornets fan, that you got two pieces that maybe can help you moving forward and give you something to build around, give you some hope. So
I agree, Mike. I don't have anything else to say, Mike. I don't know.
That's all in like a day and a half. That's a day and a half of NBA news that we really, there's a lot of other things going on in the league, but I think we probably should just leave it there because we could start, and we've already gone for how long have we been going here?
An hour and 6 minutes. A little over
an hour. So, so I think it's probably time to,
I think it's also 12:51, Mike.
That is correct. All right. So let's leave it there. Thank you for checking out tonight's NBA episode of the Hoopheads podcast, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks. Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.